today.
Blog Talk Radio.
College basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything that is college basketball. Now, once again, Saturday gave us plenty on paper to watch, of course, no doubt about it, a lot of matchups. You know, this Saturday has really been paying off all year long. Of course, on Saturdays, they're going to have some sort of solid matchup in prime time. That's kind of the idea. And then throughout the day, you'll have basketball. You know, basketball's on from 11 a.m. to at least 12 o'clock at night Central Time, if not more, with those West Coast games. So, obviously, we know Saturday is a big day for college basketball. But this Saturday, man, it has really produced, like I said, not just on paper with the match, you know, with the ranked versus ranked or whatever, but we have gotten a lot of upsets, and we've gotten a lot of ranked teams fall, and that's usually the higher-ranked team when it comes to ranked versus ranked. So once again, we got some upsets. we got some interesting things to talk about. We'll definitely start the show with recap, and then we're going to look towards tonight in the next couple of days, and then, you know, Saturday and Sunday in this regular season will be wrapped up, if you can believe it. I mean, the winter, and especially February, Marshall, it sure does go fast when it's not this brutal, brutal winter that sometimes up here these Midwest boys can go through. This winter is just flown by for college basketball, man.
I normally do have to use, like, March, and the annual trip I go on every year to a different city for the first round as kind of like a therapy session. Not that, like, I get, like, super depressed or anything, like, psychologically that far, but to me it's always like, all right, my March trip is coming up. That means winter's over. Like, here we go. But you're right. The winter hasn't been that bad, so you've been able to enjoy basketball a little bit more than, like, oh, God, it's, like, minus 15 in my car. Should I sit home and watch Carolina or drive 5 minutes to a gas station and, like, pick up a beer and then come home? I mean, you know, the weather hasn't been bad. So at least we've been able to enjoy it a little bit more. But nonetheless, it's still a time for March. It's officially March on the calendar. We had our one little extra leap day. But yeah, now it's time for March Madness. And this is, if it's not my favorite month of the year, it's definitely number two. I go back and forth on Thanksgiving and my birthday back in November. But March is just a fun time for weather to change and you to take days off work, come up with an excuse, you know, set up TVs in your living room. People seem to go to different extremes to find ways to enjoy this, you know, whatever way you can find ways to take work off, so be it. And I do realize this is a college basketball show, and that will be your main focus today. But I want to make one side note on Saturday. Because my parents, like I said on the show, they enjoy college basketball. My dad, obviously, is more of a sport fan than my mother. But they watch Carolina Duke with me. And when I was home Saturday night to surprise my mom for her birthday, which turned out awesome, they were gonna go and see some family friends. And I was like, well, they're like, do you want to join us? I'm knowing these people. I'm like, well, Carolina plays and then the Warriors play, so I was kind of planning on just hanging out at home. So my parents kind of finished cooking dinner and, you know, cleaning up the house, and they sit down and they actually were able to kind of watch the Warriors. And then about the fourth quarter in overtime at Golden State, my mom and dad actually got into an NBA game for once. And it was cool because even my dad was like, did Steph Curry really just hit that shot? It's like, dude, what planet's this guy on? And then, we won't recap Warriors game, but when Curry hit that game-winning shot, I literally ran across my, like, living room to my kitchen, and my mom was afraid I was going to break something in the house because the way that game ended, it was just madness. And to see my parents actually care about an NBA game and for Curry to hit that shot, it was a hell of a Saturday night. I know it was a pro nightcap, but dear Lord, that was kind of the icing on the cake of a playoff-type basketball game that was regular season. So you're right. We had a pretty good Saturday at College Hoops, and then you had the Steph Curry show, which was like, oh, you think the night's over? No, we're gonna do this and have a little, you know, nightcap for you and have Twitter go nuts. So a fun Saturday. But if my parents enjoy pro basketball, Chris, that means, like, Stephen Curry's, like, revolutionizing the sport.
Well, I'm sure they used to watch it once in a while when Jordan would be on in there too. So
sure.
There's that type of player or moments that definitely get people's attention no matter what walk of life, or even if in a family where sports isn't on, like your family, you know, like you said, your pops is into sports and all that, but your mom's not as much into it. But even in ones that have nothing to do with it, especially when the playoff time, you know, comes around, you'll definitely hear and see a lot more eyes on it, no doubt about it. And by the way, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring that up too. And I do not want to hear any more complaining about guys jacking threes from dumb spots on the floor, okay? You know why? Because Stephon Curry told me I could do it. Just like Jordan told me I could put up 38 shots. The problem is, people don't realize that he was hitting 50% of those 38 shots. You know, everyone thinks he just was a volume shooter. Like, Kobe got in there and was like, it's a volume shoot, right? Okay, I'll shoot 44%. Nope, you can't do that. And just like, no matter how that turned out, that result, which was phenomenal, that will always still be a bad shot, Marshall. It'll be we cannot teach the youth that that's a good shot, okay? Stephon Curry's on a different wavelength when it comes to that stuff.
Yes.
But we have to remember that right there, that's a bad shot at the time, okay? And I don't want to hear you complaining about people jacking shots, because this Stephon Curry is doing some shit that we haven't seen. And really, even Draymond Green said, when he put that thing up with 3 seconds left, I thought, what the hell are you doing? And then he goes, but it went in, and it just made me giggle. You know what I mean? It just made me go, okay, sure, that'll work. You know Kerr at some point, whether it's a text an hour later or a whisper in the ear going, hey, let's not make that a habit, okay, thanks. But what a great way. But that's what I'm saying,
yeah.
Okay? I had to go through the waves of the late 90s, okay? When you weren't into NBA basketball, I had to watch all these youngsters come into the league and jack frickin' 32 shots a game because they thought they were the next Mike, or at least ESPN thought they were. So we have to remember that was a bad shot. He shouldn't have taken it. And all those coaches out there, tell your players that, okay? Don't tell them they should take that shot, because they shouldn't. Oh, that was great, though. But anyway, let's get on course. It's still basketball, so, I mean, at least we're
yeah.
still in the realm, no doubt about it. And, of course, you know, we'll be here weekly all the way through the national championship. We do take about a week off, and then, boom, the NBA playoffs begin. So definitely stay with us as we bring us, you know, through this, you know, through all the way through the NBA playoffs. And actually, let's start with some recap on Saturday. I'm going to breeze through some scores, and then we'll get focused in on the games that we want to talk about. Villanova, actually, real quick, Xavier and Villanova last week had a very entertaining, well-played game that Xavier won, but you could see the skill level was there in that game. I just want to throw that out there, because the first score I see on ESPN.com during underscores from last Saturday is Villanova beating Marquette. Well, they did lose, but it was a well-played game, and you could, you know, you could kind of get something out of that when maybe the Big East isn't the deepest or not even as good as they were last year. You could still get something out of watching the top two teams in that conference and say, okay, now I can see them against another higher-level squad. And that's exactly what it was. It was a good, very good game. Kansas, at times, had some issues with Texas Tech. We knew they were going to scrap their way and make it, you know, a battle at least. And that's basically kind of what it was. Kansas got it done 67-58. Some other scores West Virginia got it done against Oklahoma State. They kind of bounced back from their home loss to Oklahoma. Iowa State finally got things going in the right directions. They got a chance here this week to pick up a big win before heading in to March Madness. And it is crazy. It is March 1st, man. It is officially March Madness. Baylor got a nice win. So did Texas A&M. And A&M is definitely on the way up. An upset here. Florida State beat Notre Dame 77-56. Notre Dame definitely going through a slide, no doubt about it, from where they were a couple of weeks ago, especially maybe a month ago. And now we'll get into some of those games, you know, that actually had a lot of meaning to them. And two teams that stand out as far as being on the slide right now, Marshall, when they were on the up and up, were Iowa and Kentucky. You know, you flash back a couple weeks back, and Kentucky's definitely on the rise. They're feeling themselves. They have the lead in the SEC. They're just playing well. It really looked like they came all together. They've since lost some games they shouldn't have. Iowa, a team that was a number one seed not long ago, has now fallen flat on their face. Now, there's still chance to recoup, but those two teams definitely stand out in the last couple of weeks of struggling. Now, with both these teams, Marshall, before we get into the detail of the games per se, some of these games, is it just your run-of-the-mill, well, every team's kind of gone through that, every top team's gone through a minor struggle, is that what we're seeing out of Kentucky in Iowa, and we're just seeing the parity throughout the leagues? Or is this something to be concerned with down the stretch? Obviously, you don't want to come in, you know, on the downside. Normally, we did have a little conversation about this, that don't completely rule out these teams that come in there struggling, because this year has been so strange. But what can you say about those two teams? Because I remember just talking to you in Iowa. They had a number one seed. I'm not going to say locked down, because of course they didn't. But what's happened to those two teams, Marshall?
How should I say this? I guess I'm still a believer in Iowa, Chris. I mean, to make it simple. Now, clearly they've been in a slump, but also Carolina, Oklahoma, Kansas have all been in a slump. So, like you said, there hasn't been a truly dominant team this year. Now, clearly, Iowa's slumping at the very end of the season, and Kansas had a slump in January. Carolina's kind of coming out of it. So, I mean, you can kind of pick and choose when you're going to go through your bumps. The one thing I will still stick to Iowa, and why I still think they'll be a Sweet 16 team, is because when
hold on. Sweet 16 team, you said Final Four run just a week or two ago. Now they're Sweet 16, you knock them down?
I'll even hold to the Final Four, and I'll say that. And not national title, but I still believe they could be potential Final Four. I would say Sweet 16 very confidently. And I'll stick to this till I die. Maybe they get bounced out first day like Iowa State last year. Who knows? But I've seen them play tough games on the road this year and get smacked in the face by an opposing run, whether it was Indiana or Maryland, which are tough places to win, and bounce back in those games to regain the lead. And I still don't think that most teams in this country have the star players or the mental mindset or the coaches to make that happen. A majority of teams, when you get smacked in the face and give up a big run on the road, that normally means game over. And to recover from double-digit deficits on the road and regain the lead, I still think that shows a characteristic they have that not many teams do. Now, clearly they didn't win those games, but they also played them more competitively than most teams do on the road. So I still think there's that little niche factor of mine of they have resiliency that I haven't seen in a lot of teams. So I'm going to stick with them. Now, clearly, they need to get their stuff together. You don't want to be going in cold into the Big Ten tournament you get bounced out of the Big Ten tournament in one game, then you're kind of having more of a mental negative mindset. But I'm still buying Iowa. So that might come back to bite me in the butt when we do our show in a couple of weeks if they're not to the Sweet 16 or Final Four as I predicted. But we'll see. So I'm still all in on them. As for Kentucky,
the problem is with that is they've lost to Ohio State and Penn State, especially Penn State. That's a pretty bad loss. They're 6-10 in conference. In Ohio State, these aren't like at Maryland. You know what I mean?
True.
These two were Penn State and Ohio State. So that's a little different. I guess that's why I brought it up, you know?
And that's a fair point. Like you said, they are downward trending. But I'm going to stick it out because I've said it all year. I think they're Final Four, and I'm going to stick to my claim. And if it fails me, you know, so be it. But I still believe in them, and hopefully they can kind of flip on that switch to play the way they've played up until the middle of the year, which brought them to I believe they were ranked third in the nation at a point this year. So hopefully they can rejuvenate that type of play. For Kentucky, it seems to me that the box score, from what I hear from the media, who I trust in this situation, is that they have two studs in, Ulis and, help me out, Ulis and their others, Myers, right?
Murray.
Yeah, Ulis and Murray. And I think that's about it. Because in that game against Vandy, they lost Murray, or one of them put up like 35, and the other put up 20. But they got smoked. I know in the A&M game, Ulis and Murray both went off. Their front court doesn't seem to play that well. In the games they do lose, they get absolutely smoked on the rebounds. I know that was kind of a theme in Kansas. That was a theme versus A&M. I know that Vanderbilt has some decent bigs. I didn't watch that game in entirety, but I know Vanderbilt has a couple of bigs that are going to cause you issues. So Kentucky, I'm still a little scared on. Now, thirdly, for tournament resumes, Kentucky is more proven than Iowa, Chris. Calipari rarely does get bounced out in the first round. He almost has that kind of Izzo-ness to him to where you're like, I can pretty much put Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Or you can feel pretty comfortable doing it because there's something about a team like he has, or even Izzo for more so that matter, of even more consistently, that when a certain coach brings his team in, he's going to put them at a greater chance to prosper in the tournament than most other coaches. So the only thing I'd say about Kentucky is it seems to be a two-man show, and if they maybe play a team that has a front court advantage, that could really do them in, because I don't know if you're – it just seems like it's a guard-heavy team, and the front court kind of isn't up to par. Now, clearly, with all the bigs they've lost over the last couple of years, you can't expect them to consistently trot out an Anthony Davis or Karl Anthony Towns. That would be literally almost impossible. But that does scare me a little bit, how they get pounded on the boards, and I think that is a weakness that could kind of bite them in the back, Chris.
Yeah, it does seem like they're inconsistent at that spot. And maybe if they did play some bigs that with the name, maybe that would, you know, force them to kind of change it up and actually maybe feed the ball a little bit more just to maybe get, you know, some foul problems or you know, just to make them work on that side of it. But you're right, that's an issue. But with Iowa, that's what really grabbed me was, to me, I think your point is valid as far as some of the comebacks they made, even in the losing effort. But when you start losing to Penn State and Ohio State, which is not – Ohio State's not a bad team. We just know they're not as good as they have been in years past. That's all.
Sure.
And they have improved. I got to give them credit because they actually have improved, and they actually have a good Big Ten record now. So it's not like they're some bummy team or Minnesota or Rutgers, you know what I mean? But Penn State, that's one that kind of made me go, huh, really? And they had times where they felt like they – where it looked like they had control of the game too. That's what kind of threw me off. So we'll see. But like I said, I mean – I think we said this just last week that we can't get blinded by this stuff either. You know, these are teams that could definitely do a lot. You could say the same thing about Oklahoma. Obviously, it looked like they kind of eased it up even though they lost. But that's on the road to Texas when they had just won on the road to West Virginia. So that's not as bad. But even a team like Oklahoma or a variety of these teams – you know, if you got guard play, we know what guard play means. come March, no doubt about that. Let's get into an actual recap of a game. You know, the Tar Heels, obviously Virginia Tar Heels, that's what we're going to go with. Number 3 against number 7 at the time. A well-played game. Both teams shot the ball pretty damn well. There wasn't that much difference. I mean, you could look at turnovers a little bit, but you can't really point to just one exact thing. Maybe 19 threes are a little too much for a North Carolina team, but hey, they did hit 9 of them. So it's not like, you know, I think the free throw line is basically the difference, because, you know, your Tar Heels shot almost 50% from the field, which is lovely. Like I said, they hit, 9 threes, which is good for them as well. The 7 of 13 from the free throw line maybe did them in, but how'd you see this game playing out, man? Virginia just stood up when push came to shove, and they gave that, they kind of got that cushion, and even though North Carolina was knocking on the door and thinning out that cushion, so to speak, near the end, they just couldn't quite get over the hump to make it a tie game and force overtime or even, you know, go 1 point above them and get it done. What happened there in the second half and just in general? How did the Tar Heels lose to Virginia? It was a well-played game, I thought, for most of it anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I did think that we, I mean, it's a repeating theme, but we could have played a little better defense. Virginia, I wouldn't say, is necessarily loaded offensively. Obviously, Brogdon has kind of put on a really nice show in the ACC this year for conference play and can maybe be player of the year. I guess we'll see how that turns out, Chris. But overall, I just saw a couple of mental lapses. I wouldn't say this was like a meltdown game like they may have had against Notre Dame or a mental blow-up like they had against Duke, per se. But there was a couple of moments where when you're on the road, you can't afford to make these mistakes. I specifically remember an errant pass by Bryce Johnson out of the post. He also came up short on huge free throws, which if he made both, it could have been a 3-point game with a minute and a half to go, and he missed the front end of a 1-1, and now it's a 5-point game. Clearly, a one-possession game with a minute and a half left is way different than a 5-point game, because then you're dealing with multiple possessions and you're out of the ball. So a couple of hiccups here and there. I'll give Virginia credit. I thought they played better offensively than they would have. I remember telling you if the game was in the 80s, Carolina would have won. Now, clearly, 79-74, not quite 80s, but a little bit of a higher pace, which I thought would favor my baby blue. They did come up a little short. Like I said, a couple of mental mistakes, nothing egregious, but missing your free throws in front ends of 1-1s can really be just kind of a heartbreaker, because, you know, you put in the effort to drop maybe a nice play or drive hard to the hole, and then you get rewarded with a charity stripe free throw, and then you miss it. And that's kind of, you know, a mental drag of like, well, shit, you know, we were just going to maybe make it a one-score game or not a couple of points off the lead, and then you miss it, and you're all of a sudden back on defense. I'll just say this quickly. I last night watching Carolina, I had to put the game on mute, because for the last 12 Carolina games I've watched this year, all I've heard announcers say every time, every game, throughout both halves is Marcus Paige is in a slump. The dude's fine, okay? Hey, we're a potential one seed in the tournament. We're in first place in the ACC. And you got guys like Seth Greenberg and Jay Williams saying Roy doesn't know how to rotate his bench this far into the year. It's just been a constant theme of, well, Marcus Paige sucks, and how do we rotate our bigs? Over and over and over again. It's like, I just don't get how, if we're a potential one seed in first place in the arguable second best conference in the country, how can we be so bad? Like, I don't mind announcers having opinions, but God, every game this year I've probably heard 60 times Marcus Paige having a bad year. What a tough way for him to finish as a senior. He's done fine for 4 years, and if I could just get one game in the ACC tournament or against Duke, which I doubt I will, not having to rip on Paige over and over and over again, there's other people that make mistakes, it'd be very nice. Because I'm tired of and sick of this shit. It's just every game, Tage is having a bad year. Roy doesn't know how to rotate his bigs. Why are we playing 10 people? And it's just annoying, bud. But overall, close game, good effort. But just last night, Doris Burke, all she talked about was, oh, Marcus Paige. The dude's fine, okay? And if we're a bad team, then why are we a one seed? And rant, I just had to get off my chest because I've heard it too much this year, and it's just annoying, my friend.
All right, well, here, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit because when you say he's fine, he is shooting 39% from the field, which is not fine. That's his career low since he was a freshman. He's shooting a career low from the three-point line. He's shooting a career low from the free throw line. So I don't know if he's fine. Let's put it that way. But I do agree with what you're saying as far as hearing it too much. Because I've noticed that. I've heard it a lot too. As far as the other stuff, you know, I don't watch North Carolina enough to know to sit there and talk about their rotation and what they need to do with their bigs. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah,
but Paige,
that stuff just drove me nuts.
When you're starting point guard and you're shooting under 40%, you're not fine, though, either. You know what I mean? It's kind of, I guess, I'm kind of in between on that. I wouldn't call that fine.
I guess. Maybe the word
I named three categories in that. They're all at his lows. You know what I mean? So,
okay,
and you're a senior.
Maybe he's having a slump year. That's fair, career-wise. But I've also seen him hit threes lately, so the three-pointers aren't, you know, a massive issue anymore. I also know that when he's bringing the ball up the court, I trust him more than, you know, Barry or Britt. So Is he not putting up All-American numbers like he has for the last 3 years? Yes. But he's also set a record. I mean, the dude's having an okay year. He won't be the lone reason that we get bounced out of the tournament. So it just seems all this pressure's on him, and it's like, okay, he's struggling, but he's also been making shots in the last couple of games lately. He's been running point. He doesn't commit many turnovers. Like, he's going to be okay. But I guarantee you when we play Duke, it's going to be, oh, God, Marcus Paige has had a bad year, and they'll say it 8 times again. So it's just a repetitive thing that I guess, yeah, I'm just a little worn out. Now, you're right. The stats aren't great, but I also know that we're a better team with him on the court than with him sitting on the bench, you know?
Sure, of course. So here's another game, Oklahoma and Texas, that was really a blast. And actually, Texas actually started out, like I'm talking about the early goings, started out pretty good. It was like, okay, here we go. But then Oklahoma, they look like they were going to, I'm not going to say pour it on, but they look like, wow, they're really bounced back off of that slow start. And Texas kind of caught back up to them. It was 40-37 at the half. And there were moments, and if you look at this score in the second half, 39-23, Texas came out and played just phenomenally. And although later in the game their bigs got in a little trouble, they have more depth with those bigs, and that's something that we talk about beyond just Taylor, is their bigs. And their bigs definitely got Oklahoma, Spangler, and Lateen in foul problems at the wrong times. It wasn't like it was all just late. They just weren't that effective, and they had to kind of go small, and that started really affecting, I'd say in the last maybe 6 to 7 minutes, it really affected Oklahoma majorly, and Texas just started pouring it on, and you could just tell by the free throws. I mean, they only got to the free throw 9 times, Oklahoma, compared to, it had to be in the 20s. Let me look really quick. 27 times. So, I mean, right there was huge. It was definitely huge. In the last, I would say the last 5 minutes, Texas played about as good as they can play. And Oklahoma just, I think they missed 6 shots in a row and just couldn't quite get the buckets to fall. And the score definitely doesn't, you know, do it justice as far as, like, how good of a game it was or close and winnable for each side. But I thought the bigs were a difference defensively on the inside, and I really liked how they closed down the stretch. Just everything went very well in the second half for Texas. And I think it was like once they got above them, they made a run and got all the way above, you know, a point ahead of them. And that hadn't been since it was 7-0 or whatever from the start. And pretty much after that, we know it's one way. Do you make a run? It's not like they had to make a run from 16 down or anything like that. Sometimes you end up making a run and getting it close, and then kind of the other team takes over and wins. But that wasn't the case. Once they got the score even or got up by one, they held on to that thing tight. And Texas, who had been struggling of late, I shouldn't say struggling because their schedule has just been nuts. It's been a tough go for them. And I was really impressed how they closed that. They really needed that overall. And I didn't think it was that horrible by Oklahoma as far as the whole game. But once those bigs started getting into more foul problems too early on, I mean, Texas just closed the show. And it was something like a 25-5, right? It was very impressive how Texas closed that. And let's see if they can kind of get that mojo back that they had for quite a while. Obviously, the schedule had something to do with that too, Marshall. But that was a really fun game. And that Texas right there, that close, that strong, that's that team where you're like, man, they could do some serious damage. You just never know exactly what team's going to show. But, man, when they get it all together, they really are tough. And that kind of gives them a nice little boost coming in to this Big 12 tourney, man.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they kind of had a tough goal last night, but to give them credit where it's due, they did play nice against Oklahoma. They shot the ball well. It seems like Isaiah Taylor is just kind of a very tough guy to defend. Kind of like Buddy Hield. Now, clearly, Isaiah Taylor isn't capable of shooting the three like Buddy Hield, so he tends to drive a lot more, but he's a nice player to have, and that Prince Ibe is just really – had just a really good year for center at them. You know, we've heard a lot of talk about Latin and Spangler, and I'm maybe not the biggest Spangler fan, but, you know, you also have, you know, Prince Ibe, who's had a very nice year as center, and it's kind of cool for him because he's a kid that basically rolled pine for the first 3 years of his career at Texas, and Shaka's like, dude, let me give you a chance, and he's really kind of taken advantage of his opportunity and could, you know, maybe make a potential NBA career out of it, they were saying last night. So, yeah, that was a nice win, nice closing out. And, again, a little bit of a red flag of, you know, Oklahoma, again, coming down the stretch. It's like, I like Isaiah Cousins, and I like the pieces around heel, but it seems like, all right, it's Buddy time. You know, he ain't Steph Curry, and I don't think people expect him to be.
That's
but
not fair.
We've now seen
come on, dude. Don't even mention that, dude. That's not even fair.
I'm just saying. It seems, okay, so for the Warriors, they turn to Steph. It seems like Oklahoma turns to Buddy Hield. And we've seen that repetitively.
Yeah, but that's not even they have so many other players on their team, Golden State. Let's not go there. We can't give Oklahoma and Buddy and talk about Golden State, dude. That's on a different planet right now.
All right, well, how about the fact that every time they're in a tight game, they give the ball to Buddy Hield and just say, get it done for us. And he can't always get it done. That's what just kind of scares me a little there. Now, I know that OU got cold for multiple people, but come tournament time, I really want to see how come late games, I don't know if I trust Oklahoma. If they maybe get on a run and smack you in the face and get up early, okay. But come late closing games, it's been, can Buddy get the job done? If not, all right, we lost. So they got the talent on there. That's no debating that, but constantly close games. It's like, all right, buddy, do your thing. Oh, you came up short for us. All right, no big deal. Let's go on to the next one. So that does scare me a little bit, Chris. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But it's over and over again. We've said that a lot in this show. Just quickly touch on a few more scores for you, my friend. Utah did take care of Arizona. Utah beat Arizona 70-64. The Pac-12 continues to kind of be a hodgepodge of teams that apparently all have tournament resumes, yet I looked at the non-conference of every Pac-12 team in the top seven this last week, and I don't see it. But Utah did beat Arizona. In the Big Ten, Purdue beat Maryland. This was a game where Purdue played very well. They came out shooting the ball very nicely. They also had a very nice lead coming down the stretch. And then apparently their guards kind of forgot how to dribble. Maryland kind of put on a press near the second half of that game. And near the second half of the second half, Purdue almost melted down. It was a little scary there, I suppose, if you're a Purdue fan. But they did manage to win 83-79, which is a boost in the morale that Purdue needed. We've talked a lot about how they have great bigs, and their guards are, okay. The guards did just enough to get that one done. And for Louisville, they went into Miami. Miami's been very, very good at home this year. I don't believe they've lost a game at home this year in conference and ACC at all. I don't think they've played Carolina at home. But besides that, I know they beat Virginia and they beat Duke. So they've had a very nice home run. They did manage to go on a nice run in the second half, Chris. And Miami, I'm speaking of, to beat Louisville, who played another hell of a game. And their season's basically almost over now due to the allegations. But, yeah, and Virginia found a way to, as you said, bounce back and win. So, quite a few competitive games, but overall, I think of those games I mentioned, Arizona, Utah. I know Utah's got a really nice center who's a stud, but nice one by Purdue to kind of maybe take a little bit of confidence as we near the final stretch here, my friend.
Yeah, I thought Purdue shot about as good as they're going to shoot from the field, 51%. They had it going. They played very well, even though there was some shaky moments, like you said, near the end where I thought, oh, dude, are you really going to do this, man? You guys got this.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing? So what they did, you know, and we'll see if they can actually – so far they haven't done that. They haven't, you know, brought it into other stuff. They haven't been like, all right, now next week we're going to, you know. So we'll see if they can bring it into the rest of their – you know, because
sure.
Obviously there's not much left. A lot of people are down to two games, and we'll see if they can actually carry it, you know, and get something out of it. I don't know. It's still Purdue's just – it's kind of funky how they have bigs, but, you know, you got to get the ball to the bigs, and we know that can be an issue in general. Breaking down that Kentucky-Vandy game, though, man – Ulis definitely had a rough go at it as far as shooting, 5 of 20. Murray did have 33 points, but kind of like we were talking about, you know, Lee's a nice player. He had a pretty good game. But Poultris and a couple other bigs, they just, like you said, they've had a run with bigs, but it is tough to keep expecting that they're going to have these bigs that are so developed beyond what we're used to and at that time and all that. So it's tough. A lot of times they like to, you know, go in and outside, you know, start the ball inside and then get guys on the outside. So I think that's something that, you know, that'll stay with them, no doubt about it. But they did get a big win not long ago, but man, they need one now because they're slipping, and Vandy, you know, is not that bad of a team. Especially when they play like that. Miami, it's interesting. I like the way Miami closed that second half. They really got the defense going, 37-27 in that second half. And it's not like Louisville hadn't been playing good coming in. So,
yeah,
Miami, man, Miami's right there, and they're still kind of under the radar. They're still a tad bit under the radar, even though they shouldn't be, per se, obviously. But they're just kind of lingering under the radar. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how that goes and see if they can carry it as well. Because, I don't know, there's just something about that team that just kind of makes you go, I haven't quite figured them out all the way. As far as Sunday goes, you know, Xavier had this big win, and like I said, it was speaking of well-played games, like I mentioned earlier, I thought it was a very well-played game between Villanova and Xavier, and it was kind of nice to see because they haven't had many tests at all in the conference, because Providence isn't anywhere near what they were last year. Butler's just okay. But Xavier, you know, there was a theory or an argument out there that maybe the Big East, and just for a couple of days, Lunari did put both of those guys at the number one, Xavier and Nova.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, you know, I didn't think that was likely, because you look at Virginia, you look at even Oklahoma. We could say whatever we want about Oklahoma, but, you know, they still actually have a chance if they were to win out to have a number
sure.
one because of their non-conference. There's some other teams, Michigan State, same thing. They won't win the Big Ten, but they could still have a number one seed if they won out, you know, all the way into the tourney and all that. So, but long story short, Xavier now is not going to be a number one seed because Seton Hall beat them. Now, does that help the Big East and say, well, look, a team that, you know, isn't a ranked team in Seton Hall was able to beat a good team in Xavier, and they're 11-5, and so maybe it gives, you know, that portrayal of, well, you know, hey, it is more deep than we thought, but I'm not sure if that's going to really pay off, like I heard somebody say the other day. But Xavier goes down to Seton Hall 90-81 after they had played pretty damn good defense, I thought, against Nova. So that was something that kind of surprised me. Michigan State kept it rolling. So did Oregon. And two others, and so did SMU, I meant to say. Two other surprises, though. And I guess with Duke, maybe it's just starting to catch up to them, some of their injuries and whatnot. But the way they started that game against Pittsburgh, it was like, holy crap, they're going to get blown out. I mean, it looked really bad right away in the first maybe 5 to 6 minutes, 7 minutes. It was like, man, it's like 16-6. And I think it got to 19-6 or something like that. But Duke managed to grind its way back and get into the game, but Pitt just kept them off and end up winning the game. And we mentioned about this earlier, too. Iowa, who lost to Penn State, now loses to Ohio State, which, you know, they do look a little better. I mentioned that as well. But Grayson Allen, the second time now, he's tripped a player. The first time was a straight-up trip, and there was no retaliation reasoning. Whereas this one, at least there was something to get to cause emotion or whatever from a player, because the player did bump into him and he did have a hold of his jersey. But it was kind of funny how this guy's tripped two people and he has yet to get suspended. I know you'll have some words about that, but that was kind of some, I'm not going to say shocker, because Duke, we know, is just struggling because of their depth, so you really don't know what kind of team week to week they're going to be, because it kind of has to all kind of work out exactly for them with ball problems and all that, and a couple guys have to really step up for them to even win games right now, it seems like. But the Iowa one, that one really got me, the Ohio State and Penn State. I mean, if you're going to lose in conference, at least lose to the really good teams on the road or something like that. Not that, like I said, Ohio State's improving, but to me, Penn State, that was a bad, bad loss. And you just wonder. I mean, they come in shooting 40%. They didn't take a bunch of threes, but they were 25% from that field, had a bunch of turnovers. It seems like Iowa's just not spreading the ball as much. They're not playing pretty ball. Like, just spreading the ball. Of course, they got guys. Every team has guys that are going to be your leading scorer and all that, for the most part anyway. But I just noticed in that game they just weren't moving the ball like they had, Marshall. They had such good ball movement early and especially midway through the season. I mean, when they had that run and they beat Michigan State twice, one with Valentine, they moved the ball just brilliantly. And that's not been the case of late. So we'll see, you know, if that holds up. And the way this is going with so many trips this year, Marshall, we're likely to see one over the next couple weeks, and probably a couple in the tournament. There might be a coach that gets in on it and starts tripping people too. What's up with, like, it's been like four trips this year. That's a lot for normal years. I don't remember this many trips by these many players, dude.
I'm not quite sure what to say. Obviously, the Oregon State, the Reed player that tripped the ref was awful. That was definitely intentional. But I also strongly believe that Grayson Allen tripping Xavier Thames on Florida State in last week's game was intentional, too. Coach K was like, well, you know, how can you suspend the guy for committing a flagrant one foul? Well, Maryland suspended Diamond Stone for a flagrant one foul after he, you know, tapped a guy's head into the floor. I'm not saying that tripping a dude's like hitting a guy's head in the ground, but it's still a dirty play. He's now done it twice, and I don't find many people, you know, saying that Grayson Allen, his foot slipped. And this is also a guy that yelled, that's effing BS, and got teed up and sent out of a game, you know, Grayson Allen in that game against Louisville. And, like, this is a guy that's, you know, like, quoting, like, you know, Bible
in the second time,
on,
like,
his,
you said,
on Twitter.
That's key.
You know,
it's two times now, too. I mean, that's different, you know. You can't look at it just like a flagrant one, you know. Or what would have could have happened? If you trip somebody, just because the result didn't end them in a guy landing on his kneecap doesn't mean that you have to go off how it looks. You know, the fact that a trip happened, that's, you don't need the result per se. You need the intent, you know.
Yeah, and you've just heard the social media kind of say, like, yeah, he's becoming the next, you know, Reddick of the disliked white guy on Duke. Well, when you start tripping people, you know, I don't see what else reputation you can get. There was no reason for those trips. So, you know, some shots were coming at him. Well, yeah, dude, I mean, you're bringing it upon yourself. And obviously, Coach King is going to defend him, but that's one thing I've always said. Like, even though, like, obviously as a Carolina fan, I'm not going to cheer for Duke. There's lots of other schools that don't just like Duke for many reasons. So he is kind of becoming the next Duke guy that people are starting to get fed up with. And he's not, like you said, he's not doing himself any favors. And, I mean, if he trips the guy again, like, it's like, dude, you can't keep doing that. You know, it is dirty. And like you said, that can end up hurting someone eventually. So for that game, you know, we've talked about a couple of teams getting crushed up, crushed on the boards. Pitt just absolutely smoked Duke down low. They crushed the boards very well. I was able to watch that game for the second half, and you never really felt like Duke was going to be in it. Ingram didn't really do much in the second half. Every time I happened to see him with the ball, he appeared to be passing it off to Grayson Allen, who hit a couple of shots. But as you mentioned, Duke was never really in the game, and that was a nice one by Pitt. And Pitt's kind of working on that, like, small bubble outside, so a win against Duke and maybe a decent run in the ACC tournament, and you're going to put enough on your resume. Like I said, I'm not maybe sold on all the bubble teams we have in this country right now, so maybe Pitt, you know, a win against Duke, we'll see. For moving along, as of Monday, Chris, Kansas did smoke Texas. We've talked a lot about this year about how certain teams seem to have the number on certain teams. And we could go through it, but we won't. But it seems like, you know, Team A might be playing good against Team B, but they can't beat Team C kind of deal. Now, I don't think Texas is a 30-point joke. They lost to KU last night, but KU smoked them. I was watching that game, and Kansas came out hot. It was 15-0, I believe, before Texas scored, and Texas missed, like, their first, like, 13 shots. And Kansas had that loose kind of swagger that I haven't seen for quite a while, and they just played very, very well. Kansas smoked Texas. But the one minor red flag for Texas, I'd say, is they're not the best shooting team. There's a lot of positives I can give you about Texas, and I'm probably become more of a fan than I expected this year. But you now got in smoke at home by Kansas and by Baylor in games where you shot very poorly. That is kind of a red flag. They have a lot of people to love in Lambert and Isaiah Taylor and Prince Ibe, and they've been a fun team to watch. They could make a deep run, but they're not a consistently good shooting team. So come tournament time, are we going to see a Texas that's beat? I think they have 4 wins in the top 10 this year, which is most in the country. Are we going to see that team? or you're going to see a team that's kind of clanking shots, and next thing you know, you're down 20. It's a little bit of a hot and cold. Now, I lean towards the hotter, but you've gotten smoked at home now two out of your last three games. That's a little scary if you're Texas, where you better bring it on the defensive end for sure, because you do have moments in your team where you don't have a true sniper. You have a lot of good people, but they do have their cold nights, and when they get cold, it appears the whole team gets cold. Obviously,
well, and Taylor and that point guard is really getting off the dribble. That shorter dude, they're really about getting off the dribble. Yeah, they're getting off the dribble.
Yeah.
That's what their strength is. So you're right. Their outside shooting isn't great.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think Lambert's a good three-point shooter for them, but like that Davis and Roach and Taylor, like they can hit them. But I've seen those guys miss a lot of open threes this year, so a little scary there. The other two ranked teams that were in action last night, two teams I've enjoyed watching all year, obviously my Carolina Tar Heels. It was senior night. Roy did the awesome thing of starting the walk-on seniors who, barely ever play. So that was obviously a cool moment. They got to play the first 2 minutes of the game, which is a class move on his part. I always enjoy watching that. Syracuse did put up a good fight against Carolina, but the Tar Heels came through at the end. Again, offensively, they looked nice. I really just didn't see them losing that game on senior night at home. A little bit sluggish in the first half, but offensively, they're as gifted as any team in the country. Now, defensively, they're the opposite. But when Iowa State wants to shoot the ball and score, they can do it with anyone. And they were able to beat an Oklahoma State team who has been depleted and absolutely murdered by injury this year. So three ranked games, and obviously Kansas kind of took care of business. Overall, nice wins by those teams. And like I said, Chris, Texas is – they got pieces. But to flip it over, on the opposite point of that game is Kansas. You know, you keep hearing about how they – this is now their 12th big title in a row. It's like, that's awesome. That's something to be proud of. But I was kind of thinking this week that I wanted to tell you this on the show. Kansas kind of reminds me of the Atlanta Braves. A team that won the NL East like 13 years in a row. And you look back, you're like, oh, dude, they must have had like three or four World Series. They got one. Kansas is good. And we keep giving this praise. But how can a team so good only have one title in this whole run? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just because I'm an anti-Kansas guy. But it's just Kansas, get all this love again and again. They've had a lot of early exits of teams that no one expected it. So is Kansas playing good right now? Yes, they are. Do you want to get too high on that train? I'd wait and see, because I won't be surprised if come Sweet 16 weekend, in your bracket, you see KU crossed off, because they have great regular seasons, but they've done a lot of choking too. So we'll see. Maybe this is a different Kansas team, but I'm not ready to maybe give them all the praise they're getting now, because I've seen this story over and over again, Chris.
Well, I don't think you're really doing a good job of pertaining it to this team and how that could fall apart. But you make a point as far as getting bounced out of the second rounds at least three times in that run. Right, like early. But they also did win one, and they also did, which is something Roy Williams, when he was there, didn't, and they had a similar run, by the way. But also, they did make it to two championship games, too. So it's not like they've been getting bounced out every time. It's not like they're Nova the last couple of years. So,
no.
And obviously the Big 12,
yeah.
Something we've said in the past of how good can the Big 12 be this year. Well, I think it's pretty good this year. You know, the whole thing
true.
Of, well, if Kansas keeps winning, then how good could the Big 12 be? That is true, and that's something we've said over and over. But this year, I think there's some pretty quality teams. Now, last year, we kind of thought that too, and they only had two into the second weekend. So we'll definitely see how that goes, no doubt about it. But, you know, each year is different, and with some teams that maybe in the beginning of the year people didn't think much about, they got all the way to the finals against Kentucky in 2012 with the team that a lot of people didn't even know Robinson at the beginning of that year. So we have to be fair as well. But I'll tell you what. Because couldn't you say that about – I mean, well, you know what? That's just a long debate. But here's a great game tonight.
Next week.
There's a couple of games tonight, and it's funny because Iowa and Indiana, obviously, huge game tonight. Huge, huge game. It's pretty crazy, though, if you track it back to February 11th, Marshall, and Iowa and Indiana played, and Indiana won that game, 85-78. Since then, they've won 4 out of the last 5 since that game. Iowa, they've lost 4 out of their 5. They've lost 3 in a row, Marshall. That's what I'm trying to get. Like, I just don't. Like, you'll rip Oklahoma for losing 2 or 3 in a row and have a big question mark there. But then when Iowa loses 4 out of 5, Marshall, and none of them were ranked except Indiana. And actually, at the time, Indiana wasn't ranked because they had stumbled a little bit. So here's Michigan State. Now, Wisconsin's solid right now. But Ohio State, Penn State, barely getting by Minnesota, by the way. I almost forgot about that. They barely got by Minnesota. Now, isn't this a trend that is worth, you know, putting a yellow flag up? You yellow flag all these other teams, but you don't yellow flag your own squad that you picked to go to the Final Four. I mean, come on. It's a big game at Iowa, Carver Hawkeye Arena. They need this. All these struggles are definitely an issue, but they really need to get it done tonight. And whichever team plays the best defense may do it. I know that sounds funny because both teams are really more oriented on the offensive side. And there's kind of a big difference here in field goal. 50% Indiana averages as a team compared to 45%. That may sneak up. If Iowa's ever going to win a game and get on that good foot again and get that mojo that they had midseason, this has to be the game right here, doesn't it? You're at home. It's at the against the team that's above you in the standings. If you can't rise up right now, I don't know when you're gonna.
You're right, and I will say there is reason for concern. I know occasionally on the show I've gone back and forth, so I guess the reason I say I still believe in being the Final Four is I want to stick to my claim. Because I've been a little wishy-washy on Kevin Sumlin, per se, for football. So, obviously, I didn't expect them to lose to Ohio State. And so I'm with you. They're not playing good, but I'm also not going to fold and say that I'm not going to give away my Final Four pick either.
I respect that. I totally respect that.
Yeah.
But the problem is you rip a other team. Like, you tear apart Oklahoma almost all season. I shouldn't say. Tear apart, but for where they are in the rankings and their wins, you rip that team. But then Iowa, they can lose to Penn State, and they're still gonna be. You know what I mean? I guess.
Yeah, and if I was,
I like sticking to your guns, but.
And if I was in Vegas, I would bet on Oklahoma to probably beat Iowa on a neutral court. So that's a fair point made by you. This could be a nice one though to kind of turn the ship around. Obviously. A loss here, and then you are looking at they can maybe even finish like fifth or sixth in the Big Ten because all of a sudden you do have a cluster bleep in that conference of teams. And I mean, that I think maybe mathematically the tiebreaker is Wisconsin to finish second. And who the hell would have thought that after they started the year 1-4 in the Big Ten conference? That would definitely be a head scratcher. So, yeah. I want to see Indiana because it's not exactly a fair schedule in the Big Ten. You have too many teams, so not everyone plays home and home, I believe. They've kind of had a softer schedule. So everyone's starting to give Indiana praise, and from their record, you can do it. But they've also had an easier schedule than an Iowa or a Purdue or even a Maryland, per se. So this could be a get-back-on-track game, but if they lose, then I'm with you. Then the yellow flag is then maybe be held up even higher. Also tonight, Texas A&M plays Auburn. That's a game where A&M just needs to win. It's not going to cost you the tournament, but it might drop you a seed. Like, that's a game you just need to win. Same with Purdue playing Nebraska. Purdue especially. You got a nice win over Maryland. You're feeling some confidence, and Nebraska is not great, but with Tim Miles, they always play pretty well. So don't slip up. Same thing for Duke and Wake Forest. But for a bigger game, Chris, Baylor does travel into Oklahoma. I'm excited for this one. Obviously, Oklahoma, it just as you foresaw mentioned, maybe did that on purpose. And again, I am critical of them, but maybe I'm critical of them because I also realize they have a potential in a higher window than I would say most teams do in this country. They're still also a team that I think could cut down the nets with my Tar Heels this year. I want to see how this matchup goes because you have a lot of just good players for Oklahoma. And then you have Baylor, who I think athletically is as talented as any team in the country, with Torian Prince leading the way. That guy is just simply fun to watch. I truly just enjoy watching him play. And then you have a couple of guards who can really shoot the three ball for Baylor. I guess I expect Oklahoma to bounce back. I mean, this last month they've had, a nail-biter at Kansas. They, obviously had a tough one come down against Texas. I don't know. I think just with the ups and downs they've had, in my gut, I just think maybe this is, maybe their last home game of the year. They need to bring it. They need to maybe have a nice win to maybe get that momentum going backwards. I don't know. And Baylor just screams too inconsistently to me, Chris, because they've had a nice last month where, you see in Baylor's a good team where they can play their zone. They have their alley-oops. They shoot their threes. Some games they don't really appear to have a weakness on defense, but I think maybe we're going to see kind of the other side of them. So I know I didn't really discuss any X's and O's right there, but just in my gut, with the way Oklahoma lost and the way the Bears have been playing recently, I know they had a tough one to KU. I do expect Oklahoma to win. They're surprisingly a 7.5-point favorite. That seems a little high to me, I guess I would say. But I like Buddy Hield and Oklahoma to bounce back. And also, I just mentioned the Big Ten has a huge log jam for second place. The Big 12 tournament championship is going to be clustered too because you have Iowa State, Baylor, Oklahoma all fighting there for a potential 3-7 seed. They have a huge kind of cluster up there too. So we're getting to the point now where with all these parodies of conferences we've had, being a 2 seed in your conference tournament and potential bye is a lot nicer than being a 7 seed, maybe having to play the top 3 and top 1 team in your conference. So a little bit of negotiating and tiebreakers left to sort out, which will be a very fun conference tournament week, starting next week for big conferences. And actually for small conferences, Chris, you don't get all the exposure, but some of those actually start this week as well, my friend.
Yeah, they actually do. Yeah, you're right. A lot of it does. And it'll be like, even like the West Coast Conference, they'll be like on a next Monday type thing. And they'll randomly be during the week when you think, oh, wait, they're not, the tournaments haven't started, but they'll definitely start. And just to break it down before we get into Saturday and some other games, ACC standings, North Carolina and Miami near the top. North Carolina has 13 wins, so they're 13-4. Miami has 12 wins, so they're 12-4. Virginia and Louisville locked and loaded at 11-5 apiece. Obviously, Virginia, or technically Louisville, can't win it per se, but they could still go out with pride like they have showed a lot, no doubt about it. And Virginia, now that they beat North Carolina, they really need Duke. They need to, take care of themselves. They'll have their own work to do, but also they need North Carolina to go down to Duke. Like we said, Kansas has got it done. They're 14-3 at as we stand anyway. And then it is kind of a mix. Iowa State really needed that win. Now they're 10-7 in conference, which is not great, but they definitely needed that win. And it is just a mixture there. West Virginia is still over Baylor and Oklahoma. Baylor and Oklahoma is a separation game right there. They're both at 10-6, so that'd be interesting as well. Villanova basically has it locked and loaded. We mentioned that. They're 14-2 and 13-4 for Xavier in that big East standings. In the Big Ten, I mean, this is ridiculous. Indiana's sitting at 13-3. 23-6 overall. But Michigan State, Maryland, Iowa, and Wisconsin all tied at 11-5. You have four teams there tied at 11-5, and it's not like Ohio State and Purdue is far off, 11-6 and 10-6. So, like you said, that's about as close as it can in some of these races. And now the SEC, you know, we were basically, in a sense, you know, writing Texas A&M out of it. I mean, they kind of did themselves the way they were playing. It was kind of like, man, A&M is just falling by the wayside. I remember they got that nice win with the Big 12 Challenge, but and they beat Iowa State. But, man, obviously that's not as big as an accomplishment as it looked like then, but they also were right in between back-to-back losses. And here they are with Kentucky, 11-5 apiece. Kentucky and A&M at the top of the SEC, and then South Carolina, Vandy, and LSU, 10-6. So, I mean, it is – it's all right there, like you said. And just to finish up on the Pac-12, Oregon, Utah, and Cali all up in there. Arizona's still 10-6, so it's kind of struggling right now to get that – probably to get it, but it is 12-4 and 12-5. Oregon's on top of Utah. So, I mean, this thing is coming all the way down to the wire. And what do you know? We got another Saturday just filled with quality games, man. I mean, this week is pretty good during the week. You know, it's decent, but the freaking weekend is just filled with some solid games of win. What do you feel? Do you feel like Duke is now kind of limping? Although I guess you could make the argument they were limping in on the North Carolina game last time. But what's your gut telling you? Obviously, we have West Virginia Baylor. That's a big game for seeding rights. Iowa State to be able to beat Kansas. Maybe Kansas will let their guard down just enough. I doubt it at you know, at Allen Fieldhouse, but I guess you never know. There are some, I mean, Iowa and Michigan, that's still a pretty important game. Virginia and Louisville, I mean, it's coming down to Duke in North Carolina and Virginia and Louisville. I mean, that's awesome in the ACC for those two games to be going on the same day. What's your gut, though, telling you about North Carolina and Duke this Saturday, man?
I hope we get a win. I think that it seems like ever since we did play Duke that they've really had a tough time with their depth. Obviously, it's been an issue, you know, this year, but I know basically all their starters played the full second half against Carolina. You know, I know that in the Pittsburgh game, like, Jeter came off the bench, and that was about it. In Louisville, depth killed them at the end there. They finished on, like, a 15-3 run. So I think they're just simply running out of bodies. I know every Duke fan will tell you if they had Emile Jefferson, they'd be a title contender. That's a Duke fan's take. And maybe that kid is good. I guess I can't truly break down how good a kid is on the bench that is potentially great. I will say Grayson Allen has been finding ways to score, but this Ingram kid who's gotten a lot of hype, he doesn't jump off to me as a great player yet. I know people say that he's like a projected top three pick in the draft, and maybe they see him as one of those kids that has NBA talent, but it's not really translating on the court. People loved him after that Carolina game, but he was 7-for-21 from the court. In Louisville, he had 9 turnovers. In that Pittsburgh game, like I said, he was very passive-aggressive in scoring. So if you're going to rely your whole offense on Grayson Allen scoring the ball for you and, you know, shooting threes with that Kennard guy, and they keep getting beat down low, this isn't even a shot at Duke. I just think that they're running out of bodies and they don't have a great down-low presence. Plumlee's okay. He doesn't screw up much. He gets his rebounds and he fights hard for layups, but he's not maybe a presence that really is going to maybe scare a team. And like I said, they keep getting crushed on the board. So I think if Carolina can go down low like they did in game one and not forget about it in game two, I really like our odds to win. I know that our season stats won't change because it's been too far into the year. But since that Duke game, we've actually been hitting some threes. We hit, I think, 8 or 9 threes last night versus Syracuse. As you mentioned, we hit 9 against Virginia. Maybe a little bit of a spark or practice for some good fortune. We've been shooting the three ball better as of late, which for a team that kills people down low, for Carolina, that's really all we need. We're going to score points down low. So if we can pull together some
with defense would help too.
Yeah. The defense, I'm just hoping that's maybe a extra energetic level that I'll see from my baby blue in tournament time. They do always seem to play a higher level of defense come tournament time. I wish I'd see it more during the year, but I guess I'm also just relying on the faith and the heart and the will because there's, you know, a lot of their star players on this Carolina team are seniors. Paige and Bryce Johnson aren't coming back anymore, and they're not necessarily a lottery NBA people. So this is kind of their glory, you know, way to finish out on top. So I guess we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I do like our chances to win just because we normally play 9 to 10 people, and we crash the boards. And if we can do that against Duke, I do like our chances to win. They're just rampaged by injuries and really having a tough time just defending themselves against the glass.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Think about Ingram is though. I mean, I think you're kind of casting him off a little bit too much. The guy's under 200 pounds. He's like 180 or 190, and he's 6'9", so he does get pushed around a lot. But the guy shoots 40% from the three. He shoots a decent percent from the field. I think it's like, you know, mid 40s or something like that. He is averaging 17 points a game, which is not anything to blink at when it comes to college. So I do like this guy's potential. But, you know, as far as right now, he definitely – first, he probably has to stop growing so he can put on some weight.
Sure.
You see that a lot. But, I mean, when you're under 200 pounds, it's a little rough if you're a tall guy. It's a little different if you're just a 5'10", you know, buck 80, 5'10", buck 90, 5'10", could be a brick shithouse, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it's, you know, I think that has to do with it. I think that that's just the Duke blindness that's blinding you from him. Because you also said that Grayson couldn't score, and he's averaged 20 points before. So I think it's just the blindness. But as far as the game, I agree. I think you broke it down great because they just the odds that Plumlee's going to have a game like he did, you know, in the first game, they still don't have a couple of their guys. I just, Matt Jones is still a guy that 40% three-point shooter. He can spark another score, another long, lanky body. It just, they're just depleted, no doubt about it. West Virginia and Baylor definitely have, like I mentioned, a big game there as far as just getting another quality win before the day's out, or I should say the year is out. But, I mean, it's coming all the way. This is it, man. I mean, this is it. We're going to be back next Tuesday talking about the seedings for the tourneys and just a mixture of stuff. Obviously, we'll have a lot to recap from this last weekend, but it's crazy. I mean, it's so funny how quickly this year has gone, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we had a very mild winter here up in the Midwest and in Minnesota area. So that was pretty crazy how quickly this has gone, man. I mean, I can't believe that it's March and it's, we're starting to get there, man. It is March Madness officially. And I just can't wait, man. This is going to be fun. It's going to be a fun first week of March with some of these games that are still meaningful, and we broke down, you know, the top conferences, and beyond the Big 12, you know, there's a lot wide open. Obviously, Iowa needs to get it done tonight if they want to have any shot, and really any shot in general, because if Indiana wins the game, they're going to win the Big 10 then. You know, it doesn't really matter what happens in their next game at that point, I don't think, because they have that you know, Michigan State has those 5 losses. There's nothing they can do about that. Same with Wisconsin. So I really think that it comes down to that game tonight, because if Indiana gets it, man, it's a wrap. But if Iowa gets it, then obviously Indiana still has a chance, and there's, you know, it adds to it. But as far as just getting it done tonight, if Indiana wants to get it done tonight, they got to go in Iowa to get the job done. And man, that would be a huge confidence booster for them. Is there anything that you want to talk about before we get out of here? I know you got to work here soon.
I got 5 to 6 minutes left. I just drove here, so I got a little time to spare.
Okay, cool.
Just one point, and then I'll just say it quick. Okay, so LSU's in a ton of trouble. I don't want to swear, but imagine the words. They better win that SEC tournament. I know we haven't touched on them as much lately, but when you lose to Tennessee and you get rolled by Arkansas, that ain't pretty. So I just mentioned Ingram for the potential draft. Okay, he might go high. I'd be against that, but it is what it is. Ben Simmons, stud kid, but it's going to be weird watching the stud kid play in the NIT this year. Kind of crappy, but I also don't think that you should give them a spot just because, you know, they got Ben Simmons on the team when their record's not as good as fellow bubble teams. And I'll just say this quickly, Chris, and we haven't touched on this all year, just because I've normally never been against it. But I feel that our society, you know, we're kind of a trendy deal. If you see something on Twitter, you retweet it. It's the cool thing to do nowadays. People maybe like to follow the majority instead of having their own minority opinion. And I'm with Sean Miller. He touched on how, are we going to keep letting kids rush the court? Because eventually someone's going to get hurt. Now, I don't hate rushing the court, but I do feel now that it's almost become a, let's get out there as quickly as possible deal. Back in the day, I would always defend rushing the court. So, all right, it's a fun college tradition. But my God, in like that Texas Tech OU game where there was a travel, there were kids at midfield, about 2 seconds once the game was done. So I'm becoming more of a coach and I'm more scared for safety. If you rush the court in a calm manner and do it in a way to have fun, that's fun. But the more I realize it this year, that Sean Miller statement he made in the press, this last week kind of hit me up. It's almost like, how fast can we get on the court to create a mobbing other than let's celebrate our team's win? So it sounds kind of stupid, but it'd almost be nice if you can maybe have like a 30-second window of the game's over, let's let the away team and the officials get off the court, then we can celebrate with our teammates. Because the main goal of rushing the court is to celebrate and honor your team win. Waiting 30 seconds to allow safetiness is not a bad idea for me. People might say, oh, well, the game's done and you lose the madness of rushing it. Well, the madness of rushing now has become over the top to me, and this kind of pissed me off. You don't need to get on the midcourt within 2 seconds to try and be on SportsCenter. That's not the point. The point is to be like, God, we want a big game and upset a team. Let's enjoy the moment. What's your take on this? I mean, we haven't touched on it this year, but the way I've seen the rushes occur, it is kind of becoming over the top to me, and I do not want a player to maybe shove a guy like Miller said and have his player get suspended or someone get hurt, because the rushing's going on too quick. And I do have time for your answer. I'm kind of curious as to what you have to say about this, my friend.
And we talked a little bit about it because there was that reporter in Iowa State that got hurt.
You're right.
But you're starting to see like a team that's not ranked but are like 11-6 in conference rushing the floor because they beat a number 10 team in the nation. And it's like, dude, you're 11-6 in conference. But that's the problem, though. If we let it, how do you edit it? This isn't a big enough win, guys. Back up. We'll get you next time. It's a really – you either got to make a rule, no court. You know, you got to do it kind of like the SEC football, you know, where they say, all right, come on out, but you're going to get sprayed with mace. You know what I mean? You're going to get kicked out for good. You know, that type of thing. So, I don't know. That's a tough one. I think you should just not – you. It should probably just straight up not be allowed or be allowed because you can't – pick and choose win. They're not going to say it over the loudspeaker. This is not a big enough win. So, therefore, you know, last year you guys should have done it, but now you're not going to, you know, you got to either say no or yeah. Because, of course, and it's not just this year. It's been trending that way to be a trendy thing. It's been a total bandwagon. Hey, let's just do it. Now, sometimes it's awesome. You know, when the when an unranked team beats a number two or a number one, that's cool. But it is, just a trendy thing. And if it goes away, it wouldn't bother me one bit. It just to try to control people. I think if you're going to get into the 30-second rule, then you're going to be have a problem too. You know, I think you should either be on or not. Real quick though, why would you?
Sure.
You don't think Ingram's a top five or top ten pick?
No, well, people are saying he's top three, and maybe it's fatigue that's been wearing him down. But in the last like five games I've seen him play, I would not take him top three. My Duke buddy tells me this every day that he's like maybe a top two to top three pick, and some people even said after the Carolina game he could be taking number one. Well, I would like to see how his numbers have been the second half of ACC play, because I haven't seen a kid special at all in the last five games that would tell me, hey, let's take this kid number two. I realize that he probably put up decent numbers and better three-point shooting earlier in the season. And maybe it is fatigue, because you do have a kid that these starters on Duke are playing probably 37 to 38 minutes a game, barring foul trouble. So maybe fatigue is playing a factor, but I haven't seen a kid worth a number two pick. Ben Simmons, that kid needs to learn how to shoot. I'll give you that. He can't shoot a jumper to save his life right now, but he's got the tools. I'm not investing a number two pick in same with D'Angelo Russell last year. I'm not seeing this kid yet either, and I would say that I've seen less out of Ingram than I did in D'Angelo Russell over the last year during glimpses.
Oops, I had my mute on. Okay. All right. Well, I'll let you get out of here because it's coming down to the wire there, so you can get us out of here.
Well, we will be back next week. Like Chris said, we're getting very close to tournament time. I can't wait to call my buddy from Denver and try to fill out brackets here. Maybe we're better off doing brackets drunk this year. I normally take some pride in doing our show sober, but when we're making picks, maybe we're better off just, you know, throwing darts at walls this year the way the season's gone with teams like Oklahoma or even my Tar Heels or Iowa or Maryland. Who the hell knows? So it's going to be a fun week. I hope to recap a Tar Heel victory on Tuesday, but who knows? To predict stuff this year has been tough. So thank you for listening to the show. We always enjoy it. Take care. Have a nice weekend. Peace.